Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren, sponsored by LuggageForward.com. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello, welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you're with us. As always, I'm Mitch Lawrence in beautiful Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Darren out there in the wilds of California, and we're glad he is. And Darren, we had a chance to experience a podcast with Bill Welter of Journeyman Distillery. It was one of the best that I have been a part of. So much to learn, such a great company and such a great guy, passionate about the game. We're going to get an emergency nine out of Bill right now.
Every time we talk about Journeyman Distillery, I think so much good whiskey. And that is what we were talking about. But today we're going to dive into his golfing soul with the Emergency 9 Golf Travel Questionnaire. Can't wait to see what he has to say.
All right, me too. I'm glad you found us as always. GolfNewsNet.com, iTunes Podcast, Audio Boom. And of course, Stitcher and Darren on social media. You can get to him at Getaways Golf on Twitter, at Golf Getaways on Instagram. You can find me at both, at Mitch Lawrence, LauranceE, just because. And we want to just quickly mention, before we get to Bill's Emergency 9, a way to make all of our golf travel destination trips dreams come true, and that is Luggage Forward. And Darren, you and I have talked about it. I got to experience Luggage Forward firsthand on our recent trip to Abandoned Dunes, and I couldn't have been more excited to have it happen. And then once it did happen, I couldn't have been more grateful to get the stress of shipping my golf clubs to a remote destination, having them be there when I got there, picked up at my house. The worry-free, stress-free part of this to me really blew me away.
Oh man, it is so great. I've used them on a couple of different occasions. I've shipped my clubs to Minnesota for a big trip I did to the upper Midwest. I had a great trip where I flew to the Dominican Republic to work on a story and had to come back and fly to Phoenix. I used them to get my golf clubs to Phoenix. It makes the experience in the airport so much easier, so stress-free. You know your golf clubs are just going to arrive and be at your destination. You don't have to worry about getting them through TSA, messing with all that. You don't have to worry about your weight restrictions, you know, as you're going through. So I can't imagine why more people don't do it. It is just kind of the perfect solution to get your golf clubs where you need them to go.
I totally agree. And once you use them, you will never go back. I guarantee it. Check them out today. LuggageForward.com is the place to go. And you and your back and your stress level and all different parts of you will be glad you did. All right, let's get to the Emergency 9. We love this because we get to find, we've already found out on an earlier podcast about Bill Welter of Journeyman Distillery, a frequent golf traveler, worldwide golf traveler, a great player, just somebody who is so in love with the game and has been for a long time, played college golf at Missouri State, lived in St. Andrews. He's got a wealth of experiences. So we're looking forward to the Emergency 9. You can find Bill and information on Journeyman Distillery at Journeyman Dist, D-I-S-T on Twitter, at Journeyman Distillery on Instagram. And of course, JourneymanDistillery.com is a fantastic website. I suggest you go there and spend some time. You will be glad you did. We've talked to him before about Australia, Tasmania, King Island, but on the E9, on our Emergency 9 bill, today we're going to go anywhere you want to go. That's got to be thrilling for you. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways.
Yeah, thank you guys. Look forward to this.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
are you sure you're looking forward
sure.
to it? Or have I scared you away?
I'll do my best. How about that?
Well, we know that, and it's going to be great, whatever it is. Let's get right to it. We're going to start with your favorite course, and this has to be tough.
Yeah.
You told us places you've been. Your favorite course and or destination anywhere in the world?
Well, I know this is a common answer, but obviously having lived in St. Andrews, I was literally living three blocks away from the first tee of the old course. And my experiences there, first and foremost, I'd have to say that, you know, if there's ever a time and an opportunity to go anywhere in the world, it would be St. Andrews as a whole. But the old course itself. It never gets old for me. The wind's always changing. The greens are so big. The fairways are huge. There's never a dull moment. In other words, every time you play it, you're hitting a different shot into the green, a different chip, a different putt. And the history, the life experience that I had there. It's almost like home for me. So if I had to pick one, it would be the old course. And if I had to pick another one, honestly, I'd probably pick the golf courses that I grew up on. I grew up in Valparaiso, Indiana. There's two local golf courses in Valpo. And for the same reasons, it's not as much about the destination or the quality of the golf course. It's more about my life experiences and what what transpired at those places. So many, many wonderful experiences at Forest Park Golf Course in Valpo and Valpo Country Club, some of the best times of my life. And so if I had to go back for one last round, I'd take any three of those golf courses.
Darren, how many times have people told us that St. Andrews and the old course is their spot, but to connect it with the home courses in Valparaiso, Indiana, is possibly the greatest answer to this question that I've heard.
Yeah, that's definitely one that we haven't had before, or at least a twist to the old course answer. Hey, Bill, are you one of those guys who has counted the number of times you've played the old course?
You know, I didn't count, but I kind of ballparked probably anywhere between 80 and 90 times. So it was one of those things where it didn't matter what the weather was. You know, I was in St. Andrews. I knew I was only going to be there for a limited amount of time. And if the opportunity presented itself, I was out there on that golf course. And if I couldn't get on the old course, of course, as you guys know, there's so many other wonderful golf courses that are part of the Lynx Trust, the new course, the Jubilee, the Eden course, and of course now outside of town, the Castle course. But you know, it was walking distance. All I had to do is get off the couch, and I was down on the first tee. So it was certainly easy to do, and met so many wonderful people. I think, you know, as I mentioned before, above and beyond, the golf course is second to none. But the people of Scotland, the people of St. Andrews, that's really what makes the experience.
Oh, that's definitely the way we feel as well. So moving on to number two, obviously you lived in a bucket list location that so many people have on their bucket list in St. Andrews. I know that you've knocked off what is a popular bucket list for many of our guests in that you and I was with you when you played Royal Melbourne. You've played Kingston Heath. I was with you when you played Lost Farm and Barnboogle. Tell us, you know, what's the bucket list item for you? What's the course you haven't played that you can't wait to go play?
For me, I'm really excited about the golf courses in Nova Scotia that Mike Kaiser's put together at Cabot Links there. I haven't had an opportunity to go there. Of course, you know, Nova Scotia, New Scotland, it makes sense. From the photos I've seen, it looks just incredible. It's reachable in terms of distance. I hope to find myself at Cabot Links sometime in the near future. And then, you know, just from a kind of a historical perspective, would love to play Marion someday. You know, so many wonderful historical golf moments have occurred there. And of course, I'm sure it's on everyone's list. I've never had an opportunity to play Augusta, and who wouldn't want to play Augusta and walk down that 18th hole and hit some of the shots, or at least try and hit some of the shots that those guys hit.
Yeah, no doubt. It's funny you mentioned Cabot Links. You know, you and I were at Cape Wickham together on King Island, and when I look at the pictures of Cabot Cliffs, I think it feels like a similar property, and I'm very excited to kind of see how Cabot Cliffs is constructed and how they put it together after seeing the way Cape Wickham was put together. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I see the parallels. I'd say knowing what Mike Kaiser has done and now Mike Jr., I know that it'll be as good as it can be. Those guys don't do a project unless it's the right time and place. So obviously feeling pretty confident that it's going to be worth the trip.
Let's move to your third question. Where's the best place? And clearly you've stayed in a lot of places. Where's the best place that comes to mind? Where's the best place you ever stayed?
Well, two kind of jump out to me. The first one is, staying at the clubhouse at Pine Valley. Been very fortunate. My dad's very good friend is actually a member there, so he's been extremely generous in having me out to Pine Valley on a few occasions, and staying in the clubhouse there is a truly unique experience. Obviously, everyone knows about Pine Valley, the golf course, but the accommodations there are I would say, modest, the history of the golf course, being in the clubhouse and kind of eating that up and just picking up the aura of the whole place is something that you really can't replace an experience like that. And by the way, the food is just second to none, to be honest. The member, my dad's good friend, often jokes he's a member there for the food. So it's incredible experience and just something again that where I've mentioned in the past here, the game of golf's given me so much, and that's an experience that certainly I'd say is second to none. The second place is we stayed at Greywalls in at Muirfield in Scotland, and if you haven't been to Gullin, that's a golf town right there. And kind of a interesting side story. When we stayed at Greywalls, we stayed at what they call the Colonel's Cabin, and had just an incredible experience there at Muirfield. We went into town and ate at a little restaurant. My dad's a real talker. He was sitting on the end of the table. There's another table next to him, and he's just started chatting up these Scottish guys. Lo and behold, as it turns out, one of the guys was a member at Muirfield. At the end of the evening, the conversation ended, and my dad just said, "Hey, it's nice talking with you guys. Enjoyed the conversation about the golf course, et cetera, et cetera." And my dad said, "Well, what's your name?" I guess at the end, and the guy handed my dad his business card, and it said Johnny Walker on it. And the fellow was an heir to the Johnny Walker family whiskey. So that's a little tie-in with golf and whiskey there. So my dad's still has his business card, and that was back before 2006. So who knew that eventually I'd be in the whiskey business? But kind of an interesting little side story there.
Oh, that is great, man. And you mentioned food. That's the perfect segue into question number four, which is, what is the single best thing you have ever eaten on a trip?
Well, not haggis.
Hey, don't badmouth haggis.
No,
hey,
I know.
Do not badmouth.
It's funny you mention that, because right down the street from Greywalls is a place that I've talked about on the show called Ducks. And I've talked about a putting competition that I won hitting it off a bar stool in the bar of Ducks. But it is the place where I had the single best haggis I've ever had. We always joke about the fact that if you have haggis from a chef who really knows what he's doing, it can be really, really good.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. We had made a trip over to Scotland, and the guys in my group loved it. they thought it was wonderful. I said, well, they must have advanced the technology here, the recipes on the product here, because historically I don't think it was necessarily known as the finest dish in the world. But I think you're right, Darren. From the response, it sounds like it can be done very well. But
didn't you develop a taste for whiskey? Didn't you have to cultivate a taste for whiskey?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
well, haggis is the same, Bill.
Yeah, well, I haven't taken the first bite yet.
No, is that true?
No, yeah, I've never had it.
Wow.
I don't know if I can consider myself a true Scotsman now.
No. Yeah. Darren and I have a new mission.
Yeah, I'm telling
you right now.
You shouldn't be allowed in the country.
Yeah, I know, seriously. I mean, in terms of the question, I'd have to go back. I remember in the first couple of weeks of being in St. Andrews, and you guys know the Dunvegan right there down by the 18th green of the old course.
Sure.
And, you know, I walked in there, you know, had just gotten to St. Andrews and was going to try and grab a bite to eat. I was by myself. I didn't know anyone in town, and I just sat down at one of the tables, and I remember ordering a burrito of all things that you get in Scotland. But, I remember sitting, and there's a gentleman next to me, an old Scottish guy, and he just started talking to me as the Scots do, and he said something to me, and I've kept it with me. You know, he asked me what my story was and what I was doing there, and I said, well, I just moved here, and he probably thought I was half nuts, but he said. You know, he just commented that he thought I was a very brave individual, and that to have moved over to St. Andrews, not knowing anyone in town. And to be honest with you, I mean, you know, people say things to you in your life, and you never know what might stick with somebody. But that stuck with me, and I've kind of kept that with me ever since. But I was eating a burrito at the Dunvegan at the time, and by the way, it was a wonderful burrito, but. The conversation is what I left with.
How cool.
Yeah.
That really, really is cool. I love that. I love a burrito. Of course, you know, Dunvegan, there's a lot of American influence there, but
yep.
they brought it and you accepted it.
Yeah.
How cool. All right. Besides the actual golf, and we always say we have a feeling we know what people are going to say, but we can get surprised by this answer. Besides the actual golf, the most important thing to you on a trip?
Well, I mean, I think for me, it's the history. I mean, you know, with the distillery, we really tried to find a location that was really had a story of its own. So we've got this old factory building where you know, there's corsets and buggy whips and the whole story there. I think the history is important. That's what I love about Scotland and Europe in general. It's just it's a culture that really feels like history is important, whether it's with their buildings or their stories. And for me, when I'm in a place. And half the reason I moved to Scotland is to learn about the history of the game. So I think if you take time and see some of the sites outside of the golf, talk to the people, and you'll learn about the history. So I think for me, it's just as simple as, you know, getting out and finding out what's going on outside of the golf. And then you get a little bit broader picture of what's going on in that area.
Well, certainly we're all kindred spirits when it comes to that. Moving on to question number six, what is the one piece of golf apparel or equipment you'd recommend to everyone?
Well, growing up in Northwest Indiana and playing spring high school golf, the one thing that you needed was a nice rain jacket and a stocking cap. I mean, it's played in some really nasty weather here as a kid, and then, you know, Scotland, it's not any better. So I think a really warm hat and a nice rain jacket. I mean, it's hard to beat those two things, and probably some waterproof shoes as well. I know that's multiple items, but when you grow up in a cold area, it's those things are essential.
We're not going to penalize you for giving multiple answers to a one piece of apparel question.
Right.
All right. Number seven, what is your, you've been playing for a long time. You played college golf, as we said. So clearly you've got game relative to where you are in your life and Journeyman Distillery and 4-year-old and family life and everything else. Where's your game at? What's your handicap? What yardage do you like to play from?
Yeah, my handicap right now is a 3.2. And honestly,
oh my God, Bill.
Oh, well, I'm a pretty,
what has happened to
I
you?
I know. I'm a pretty weak 3.2 too. It's one of those deals where it seems like most of my rounds are about 78, 79. And then I'll somewhere out of nowhere, I'll shoot 70 or something. Kind of like in Australia, Darren, I think I shot 70 at Cape Wickham and then pretty much averaged about 78 or 9 the rest of the trip. But, those 70s tend to drag your handicap down. But, unfortunately with the business, and fortunately for my family life, it's been hard to find time to play. I think I still have some good golf in me. I still have a desire to kind of get back to where I was at one point. But certainly, it's just as you gentlemen know, it's hard to find the time to make it go. But what was the second question to that?
What yardages do you play from? I know obviously if you've got that kind of game. Do you go for the challenge of the tips, or are you willing to move around and experience a course from the forward tees? Does it relate to the people you're playing with? What do you like to do?
I just think for me now, I'm happy to play the white tees. It's as a younger guy, it was always right foot in the rough type stuff and challenging the course and so on and so forth. But these days, for me, I think the game's more enjoyable at 6,500 yards. I think that's kind of where we've got it wrong a little bit with golf these days. I think the game isn't, and you guys, I think you guys have it right. You know, you're playing with the hickories. These golf courses just keep getting longer and longer, and I don't know that that's good for the game. I think. A little bit more accessible golf course, a little shorter distance, and I think people have more fun.
And some of that's what was great about the Australia trip is, we played from me pretty realistic yardages the whole time. That's what was great about playing with you and Craig Haltom was, we played from the same tees. We played from the same tees at Kingston Heath and Royal Melbourne, played from the same tees at Wickham. We had a blast, and you guys can obviously hit it farther than I can. And I would say, Mitch, the 70 he's mentioning that he shot was one of the quietest 70s I've ever seen. It seems like we walked off of 9 and you had shot 37 or 38 or something like that. And I was like, wow, I didn't realize it was that good, even though I knew you were playing well. But the other thing too, Mitch, is Bill is completely propped up by the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, he can make putts from anywhere on the golf course. He made more long putts on that trip to Australia than any person I've ever seen in my history of golf.
Actually, that's true. I did make a ton of putts, but that just goes to show you when those don't drop, my game is not that strong. But yeah, you're right. For some reason, there were a lot of putts that went down, and I don't know. Golf's a crazy game. That's why we love it.
Yep, definitely. All right, moving on. Who is your favorite golfing partner and why?
This would be an easy one for me. It's got to be my dad. I grew up playing golf with my dad. He'd take me out as a little guy and got me involved in the game. And some of my most memorable rounds are with him. We've shared a lot in the game and it's been a common ground for us. And both of us have a passion for the game and the history of the game. And it's uh, that, that's probably the easiest question on the board there for me. It's I love playing golf with my dad, and he gets to play a lot more than me right now, which is good. I hope to get to that point someday as well.
What's his name, if I can ask?
His name's Chuck Welter.
Okay. I want to give him some props.
Yeah.
I think he deserves his own name sometimes.
Yeah.
Dad is a great word, but let's name him too.
He's done a great job.
It sounds like it. All right. Let's see. What is the one, I have a feeling I may know what the answer is. What's the one golf course you wish everyone knew about? Does it start with an R?
No, I mean, not necessarily. I think.
Okay.
I think for me, are you saying Royal Dornick?
No, I was thinking Ratho.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think Greg's the greatest promoter of Tasmania in the world, and I think if you go to Ratho, you won't regret it. In fact, you'll be so pleased that you went. I guess for me, there's just so many golf courses in Michigan. I was just gonna promote our own state. Just right here in the neighborhood. The Dunes Club is one that I think that people may or may not know of. Of course, that's one of Mike Kaiser's first projects. The Dunes Club is 5 miles from our distillery here in Three Oaks, and then Lost Dunes is another is a Tom Doak course just down the street as well. And I think Michigan has some of the best golf really in the world. I mean, there's so many, there's a lot of Dunesland here and there's a lot of great, sand golf. So, we're fortunate to have some of this golf in the area. I remember playing a little golf course in Scotland that I'll mention, and it's called the Strathpeffer. It was a little, I think it was 5,500 yards, but this thing was like on a mountain. And we had a blast playing that little golf course. There's so many of those little tracks around Scotland. It seems like every town has their own golf course. So honestly, get in your car in Scotland and just stop at the first golf course and you'll have a blast.
Okay. Give me the name of that one again, because.
It's called Strathpeffer.
Strathpeffer. One word.
Yeah, I think it's
Puffer. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. You look it up. It's like it's in the Highlands. It's insanely beautiful, really short, and just a lot of fun. We went there on a trip. We played all these, wonderful golf courses, and the guys just had a blast on this little tiny golf course. And it's just another prime example of how a golf course doesn't have to be 7,000 yards to have a good time on it. In fact, just the opposite.
I think that's such great answers, Darren. No.
Oh, that is outstanding, Bill. Let's ask you the bonus question real quick. Do you have a favorite golf story? Do you have something crazy that either you've seen or done, or weird or memorable on a golf course?
Man, I'll tell you about a story. There's a lot of great stories, my dad and I have played in a lot of tournaments together and had some success, and everyone's so infatuated, I think, with Pine Valley. It's the number one golf course in the world, I guess, depending on the year, and many people consider it to be one of the hardest golf courses in the world, I guess a story that sticks in my mind a lot. And while it was not in a sanctioned tournament event by any stretch of the imagination, we were just out having a good time. I play with Kent Franzen. He's the member and my dad's friend and two other guys at Pine Valley, and just kind of started off the round kind of ho hum and made a four at the first and par four and the second hole's a par four. Made a par there and just kind of started plugging along and threw a birdie in there. And next thing I know, I made the turn at one under, and hadn't made a bogey, and then, went to 10 and made par, went to 11, made par. I think I birdied 12. And, next thing I'm standing on, on like 16T, and Kent says to me, you haven't made a bogey today, have you? And I said, no, I haven't. And I started thinking to myself, you know, this is one of the hardest golf courses in the world. And I wonder how many people have played this thing and not made a bogey. And so I think I made a 4 or 5 footer on 16 for par, and then got to 17, which is a short uphill par 4. And I hit a really good shot about 10 feet right under the hole. I'm getting pretty nervous at this point, even though there's, you know, it's just a fun round. I knock a little putt up there at about 6 inches, tapping in for par, and then go down 18, little left to right wind there, downhill par 4, and then uphill at the green. Hit just a tiny little block. It's hanging up in the wind, and it ends up kind of like about 6 inches below my feet on the side of the bunker. And I've got a 4-iron in, you know, it's about 185 yards. And I'm just thinking, just get this thing on the green. Well, I tug it a hair left, and there's a little pot bunkers up the left side, and it catches one of the pot bunkers. In a way, I was lucky. It looked like it was going out of bounds. And I get into this bunker. It's about a foot and a half below the grass line, and it's hard pan. I get in there. And I had played some golf in New Mexico. I had a buddy that lived in Las Cruces, and we go down there sometimes. And I remember he told me the way you get out of a hard pan bunker is you just try and, you know, take a full swing and chunk it out. So I do that. I just take a full swing. It barely gets out of the bunker. You know, hits the wall, pops up into the grass. Long story short, I chip it down to about 20 feet, 2-putt for double. Ended up shooting 69, and I can still say I walked away without making a bogey.
That is perfect.
Yeah, that's outstanding.
Yeah, it's a round that sticks with me. I would have killed for a par at the 18th, but it was certainly a memorable round, and one that'll always stay with me.
It's going to stay with us too.
Yeah.
We're going to remember that. It's something that Bunch and I'll never be able to say, but we love that you're telling that story.
I have lots of bogey free rounds. They're just all doubles and triples.
Yeah, that's not true.
I know,
because
that's
they're
true.
So mixed in there. Okay, Bill, thank you so much. Thanks for the earlier podcast. Thanks for taking our emergency 9. We hope it hasn't been too painful for you. And most of all, thanks for your love of the game, for Journeyman Distillery, for what you're doing to kind of keep all of that going. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. You've been a wonderful host, and honestly, can't thank you enough for the opportunity here today and what you're doing for the game of golf. So thank you both, and look forward to have an opportunity to see you both again sometime.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. And of course, Journeyman Distillery, at Journeyman Dist, that's DIST on Twitter, at Journeyman Distillery on Instagram, and of course, journeymandistillery.com online. I highly suggest you go there. It is a fabulous website, a lot of information, great videos, and you'll really understand what Bill Welter and his family are all about. It's a fantastic place. Darren, what a treat. Thanks for connecting us to Bill.
Oh, this has been a blast. And as always, we want to thank the listeners as well. We couldn't do it without them. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at GetawaysGolf. Mitch is at Mitch Lawrence. You can use hashtag TalkingGolfGetaways, hashtag Emergency9, hashtag 2HaggisBags to get our attention.
I want to add hashtag JourneymanFans.
There you go. Hashtag Journeyman.
I think we should do that. Yeah, Journeymen. Maybe we can do that. we'll figure something out. If we keep having enough of this great whiskey and all the other spirits, we'll figure it out.
We'll come up with all kinds of hashtags.
I think we can. And obviously, if you want to share us on your social media, do that. Rate us on iTunes. That's really important. It'll help us to spread the word about the best in golf travel and the great people and stories in the game. This has been a fantastic time. Thanks again, Bill. Thanks, Darren. Obviously, thanks for listening. Tom Petty, we thank you all the time for reminding us to run down the dreams. Take it away. So long, everybody.